You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
That's enough song. I am your host and publisher of the Bison Report, Ross Uglum, and not joining me today will be any football analysts. This is a rough week from a scheduling standpoint for all of us, but tons and tons of hoops news to get to, and I'll break down the loss at South Dakota State, preview this weekend's big matchup with SIU, a couple of 6-3 teams, a couple of 3-3 teams in the Valley. My opinion would be that if NDSU can win this game, they would clinch playoffs. And if they can beat UNI on the road at 8-3, I think they, could have a conversation about seeding. Of course, always is going to depend on, kind of what all happens with the rest of the league and sort of how things shake out and really the rest of the entire subdivision. But I think an 8-3 Bison team could maybe be in a conversation for a 7 or 8 seed. It really depends on kind of how things shake out. Hopping very briefly here into the news, 13 athletes are confirmed for senior day, which, indicates, of course, that they will not be returning then for next season. There are also a number of guys where we don't know the answer, and we'll sort of bring that news to you at Bison Report as things sort of roll along. But the guys we know, the guys that are going to be honored, Jake Lippe, and he could have come back, recently got engaged, is not going to come back. And I think, largely that's fine. Jake is a nice player, but there are young receivers, that we've been waiting to see. And that goes for the departures of Zach Mathis and Giancarlo Volpentesta as well. GC really got a lot of that blocking work and did a nice job this season. And Zach has kind of morphed into NDSU's, number one guy outside, and they'll have to replace him, moving forward. They'll have to replace his production next season. And they've got, three big kids to do it, three long kids to do it. And Carson Hagerly and Makai Collins, and certainly Bryce Lance. We'll see who kind of grabs the brass ring in spring ball and in next year's fall camp and things like that. But that big outside threat is a position that they're going to have to replace. Julian Wadarsik could have come back as chose not to. I wonder, honestly, if his position might have not, possibly gotten sniped here by Oscar Benson as well. And they are certainly getting a really big-time recruit in Jaden Pickett ready to take over that role as well. I think Jaden is a very big-time kid and probably a little bit too lean to play Sam right now, but is definitely a big part of the future of the program. Taves and Powers, Dylan Taves and Cade Powers are kids that you definitely classify as a program kid, stuck it out not without a ton of the reward of playing time. And hey, we love those guys. We have the Benchwarmers show. We appreciate those guys. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Jake Kubis, who's just old, playing at a high level this season, and really, as a guy we kind of had occasional criticisms for in 2021, his 2022 and 2023 tape are things I think really to be impressed, to be impressed by. His commitment to the program and his commitment to getting better, I think, is something you have to pay attention to. And Jalen Sundell, I think technically probably could come back for one more. I don't know that for sure, but he won't, and is definitely headed to the NFL after receiving an East-West Shrine Bowl invite. So very impressive from Jalen. Tamarick Williams cannot return. Jaden Price cannot return. Another kind of program kid, although he got a little bit of defensive burn this year in Gennaro Achama. He cannot return. I don't believe Strike can return, and Jake Cava cannot return either. NDSU men's basketball signs three players. We will discuss that with Nate Zastrow as we get a chance. And Grant Nelson, 24 points in his Alabama debut. We'll do occasional check-ins on Grant. He's a North Dakota kid, one of the best players in Bison basketball history. I get that the portal thing sucks. I get that the listeners to this podcast certainly wish that he was the Summit League preseason player of the year and that NDSU received every first-place vote, which they would have. But that's not the case. He's got 24 in his Alabama debut, dunking on people's heads, and was a second-team All-SEC preseason selection and selected as the top transfer into the SEC, and people understand what that means. I mean, Kentucky, Alabama, Arkansas, these are Tennessee, these are big-time college basketball programs. It's not just a college football conference, regardless of my Freudian slip there. In other news, Carson Wentz and L.A. Ram kind of, won Matthew Stafford, nick and scrape, and, he has been nicked, he has been scraped, away from being the guy, as Brett Rippon, after a kind of underwhelming performance against the Green Bay Packers, was released, and, they're not ready to roll with anybody else at this time. So Carson Wentz will be the number two QB in Los Angeles. The expectation is that during the Rams' bye week here, Matthew Stafford and his, I think he has a sprained thumb or a slightly torn thumb, or maybe those are the same things. I don't know. The expectation is that the Rams are going to get Stafford back after their bye here. But if not, they would have Carson, be the guy. Carson would start that game and will start any game this season in which Matt Stafford is not ready to go. And I think this is an interesting opportunity for Carson. Not that he's a bad person. He's not. He's an amazing guy. I mean, he does a ton of things for the less fortunate through the Audience of One program and foundation. I am a Carson Wentz fan. But at the same time, I think a lot of the question and a lot of the reason he wasn't with the team for so long is folks just aren't sure if he can be a number two QB, aren't sure if he, can kind of just keep his head down and so much of Carson's career, especially after that 2017 season and the massive contract extension that he signed and things of that nature, like, he's been the guy. And his ability to prove to NFL teams that he can be the number two guy and just kind of go about his business and not create any, not that he's a controversial guy, but not split the locker room and just be a reliable guy in case the starter goes down, that could extend his career, I believe, because he is certainly still one of the best 64 quarterbacks alive. But maybe not one of the best 32 or one of the best 24 at this point, where some team is desperate to start him until he can kind of prove that knee injury and some of the decision making things that have gone with that knee injury that's gone and then he can kind of be who he was in 2017 from an age standpoint. He's certainly not too old to get things figured out. He's obviously the same age as Jared Goff and younger than some of the QBs as well. Okay, diving into the South Dakota State game, not fun. Sucked. Wasn't great. Neither Trevor or I, anticipated or predicted a victory. Myself personally, I was further off on the score than Trev was. Trev almost nailed the darn thing, and I felt pretty good after NDSU went down and scored, and I think offensively things were rolling to a degree, but at some point they just weren't able to go shot for shot, and that's really, and I get it, man, like, Coach Roll's the whipping boy. I understand. It's funny, it really is funny to me to witness people on the internet ask for Coach Entz to be fired and replaced with Coach Vegan, considering how much the Bison internet community hated Coach Vegan, and for whatever reason have basically hated every offensive coordinator since I've been alive, with some exception for Courtney Messingham, which is hilarious to me because I love Courtney, but he had Easton Stick in his fourth and fifth years of eligibility running a extremely highly efficient offense with an NFL receiver outside in Christian Watson and multiple pros on the offensive line. Not only that, Courtney's post-NDSU career went as badly as it possibly could. I mean, truly, go look up what happened to him at Kansas State. It went bad. And I'm not saying Courtney's necessarily a bad coach, but just sort of the mental process for NDSU fans as they crucify these offensive coordinators and then uncrucify Brent Vegan to ask that he replace Matt Entz is it's a pretty special carousel as far as I'm concerned. You know, they've got to get something else going defensively moving forward. I've been, as public as I'm comfortable being about it. You know, I didn't love the Petrino hire at the beginning. I thought it was kind of fine. I thought maybe it would give, you know, Coach Entz an opportunity to have a little bit more input. I don't know. But they have to figure something else out. And look, the defense was a problem last year with Coach Braun here, and I have an incredibly high opinion of Coach Braun. But they have to do something different defensively. They cannot let UND score the way that UND scored. They cannot allow South Dakota State to score the way that South Dakota State scores. I don't know what that is. I think from a personnel standpoint, some of these smaller edge guys, like if they did want to go to a 3-4 front or kind of a 2-4-5 or be a little bit more multiple up front, which would certainly be a departure from the entire dynasty, guys, has been a 4-3. It really has. And I know that that's the comfortability of what Coach Entz is doing. But I don't know, man. I don't know that necessarily you have to completely change the schematic, but you have to change the results. Frankly, I thought the offense was good enough. You know, you get to I know they didn't get into the 20s, but a lot of that just I think had to do with pressing and getting completely out of your game plan when you don't get a stop until the end of the third quarter. And the offense could have been better. I mean, there's no question about that. The offense certainly could have been better. You know, teams have in the history of football won shootouts. That does happen. You know, we talk about North Dakota State not being built to win from behind. And while that's realistic, it also necessarily doesn't have to be the case, right? It's not necessary. And I do think the offense can be better, but the defense and Code Green and all the things that we remember about Bison football, the first punt can't be in the third quarter unless you're getting a bunch of turnovers. And they, forever now, have not turned over South Dakota State. They are just incapable of it. And that is odd, certainly. You know, the Bison defense has often been predicated on turnovers, and frankly, Bison football, especially with their aversion to pass and their desire to run the ball, has been predicated on ball control. But ultimately, man, they're not doing that. You know, they're losing the take give to South Dakota State every time they play them, and it's a problem. And it's not all Cam Miller's fault, and you know, there's been just straight fumbles. You know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, we make the joke, or we have some of these conversations, but it's like Tyler Roll did not fumble the ball deep in his own territory. He called a run play, but he personally did not fumble the ball deep in his own territory. And at some point, some of these things have to not happen for NDSU to have an amount of success against South Dakota State that's going to result in them winning the game. I didn't love, if I'm going to be critical, certainly of offensive stuff, I did not love or understand why Cole Payton was not a part of the game plan. I don't get it. I didn't like it. I understand, you know, the sort of bad thing that happened to Cole, you know, during last year's, not the national championship, but during last year's game against South Dakota State, and I'm just still not cool with it. I mean, you think of the guys, you know, like Jason Freeman at 5'9", 215. Jason Freeman's a very good football player. I'm not talking junk about Jason Freeman, but he's 5'9", 215. Like, that's a matchup problem for him to try and tackle Cole Payton. Even, you know, Adam Bach, who I love as a player, is just 6'1", 220. And I love Adam Bach. He's a great football player, but it's not like South Dakota State is enormous. They're not enormous. They're very good. They're very old. But even the number zero kid, who I think gets a ton of snaps, McGoffey, I don't want to screw up his name, and I really hope, you know, I'm not trying to disrespect the young man either, but you know, he's not a huge guy either. At 210, I just, in general, the Rabbits without Winkleman and Sanders are not like physically super over imposing. They're very, very, very good. Stallbird, Isaiah Stallbird, 6'1", 215. You know, some of the things that we complain about, Graham Spaulding, I think he plays quite a bit. 6'2", 210. You know, a lot of the things that we complain about with North Dakota State and how they're getting small, the Jacks are kind of getting small too. And that does make Cole Payton a matchup problem with second-level defenders trying to tackle him, and NDSU just didn't take advantage of that. And I don't love that. I don't, as Zach Wills would say, I would not have kept the Ferrari in the garage for that long. I think the big question moving forward is does NDSU win these next two games? Do they win at least two playoff games? Because, I mean, unless something crazy, I mean, if they dominate SIU and dominate UNI, maybe they're not playing on Thanksgiving, but I think there's a chance that they're playing on Thanksgiving weekend. Like, I think that's very much in the cards. I think they have to get from the round of 24 to the round of 16, and then I think they have to get to the round of 8 for not necessarily at the header. I don't think Matt Ince's job is in trouble. It's just my personal opinion. You have a guy with that many national championships as a defense coordinator, and with, you know, a couple as a head coach, and I have a problem, and I get, you know, you go on and on about the standard being a standard. I have a problem with firing an 8-3 head coach. I have a problem with, I think there just has to be some perspective. We've talked about it at this point, kind of ad nauseum, about, you know, the way they handled the portal, and that not being anything that anybody had a blueprint for, and they handled it poorly, you know, and I think some of that, as I mentioned, just had to do with they have better players than their high profile program. You know, they had better players than South Dakota State, and those players entered the portal. They had better players than UND, and those players entered the portal. Not all of them, certainly, but there was easily, from a transfer portal marketplace standpoint, easily in 2020, COVID, whatever, easily a bigger microscope on North Dakota State's players. South Dakota State wasn't what they are now, and UND was nothing. So I know that sounds like an excuse, but it's reality. They did not have a blueprint for COVID. They did not have a blueprint for the portal. You know, I'd like to see probably this staff get till 2025, where, as has been mentioned, you know, there are no more COVID players, excuse me, where everybody's back on the 5-year clock and the 6-year clock is gone, except in, you know, specific medical redshirt situations. And we'll see kind of when everything gets back to equal, and you know, NDSU's got this NIL collective thing rocking and rolling. Are they even still FCS? If they go 8-3, I would have a hard time moving on from a head coach at 8-3. Like, that's just my opinion. And I understand what the standard is at NDSU, but that is my opinion. All right, let's bring on our hoops guy, Nate Zastrow, to have maybe a little happier conversation. Joining us now by phone, North Dakota State men's basketball analyst and Bison Report favorite, Nate Zastrow. Nate, buddy, how are you?
We're doing well. It's good to get off to a 2-0 start, unlike past years when NDSU seemed to get off to slow starts and found a way to get a big road win at Western, which was nice to see with the coming back.
Yeah, you mentioned that was the last place you played for the Bison. I actually remember that. We were out, me and a mutual pal of ours, Reed, who's doing very well for himself now. Shout out to Reed. We're out skiing with a group of guys out in Montana, and we're paying attention. I think that was either the CBI or the CIT that you guys were in.
Yeah, that was the CBI. We had lost to South Dakota State in the semifinal, and then the next day after selection day, we flew to Western Michigan and played them on like Tuesday after selection Sunday. So
right on.
Yeah, that was the last game in Kazoo. So crappy gym.
Yeah, the gym doesn't look great now either, and we're probably almost 10 years removed from your final game.
Yeah, the lighting in there was not great. And they got that weird yellow color, and it just doesn't go with lights.
Sure. It seemed like, though, it kind of seemed like another episode of the November Bison, you know, and that's been, you know, for whatever reason, Coach Richmond has always preached, and I shouldn't say for whatever reason, because it's when it's the most important, but for whatever reason, you know, NDSU has struggled early in the season. You know, I think the Saul era and the Tim Miles era were certainly, you know, known for their high major victories. Everybody remembers Marquette and Wisconsin and Notre Dame and things of that nature. And that has not been the case for Coach Richmond, good, bad, or indifferent. But he has had, I would say, unprecedented success in March. You know, as far as the number of times that he's been to the Summit League tournament, the number of times he's won the Summit League tournament, those types of results are hard to argue with. But it was, you know, it did seem familiar as they got down double digits to a road opponent that's picked kind of low middle to the pack in the MAC. And look, I think no one would argue that the MAC is a slightly higher level league than the Summit, or you know, Saul probably wouldn't have left NDSU for the Ohio job if the MAC wasn't at a slightly higher level than the Summit. But, you know, Western is, like I said, picked to be a low middle pack team and a true road game. But boy, it did seem kind of those early season struggles were familiar.
Yeah, it always takes some time. And, you know, you've been practicing against yourself, beating the crap out of each other for probably over a month now, and you're just ready to play someone else. And you kind of just coast into it a little bit and just don't want to be too aggressive, don't want to make any mistakes early on. The younger players showed some great composure and stuff that they've learned from last year, where they, you know, kind of just got thrown to the wolves a little bit, and you could tell that they learned from their experience and just stuck to the game plan. They got down, I think it was 10-0 early, and we're sitting there like, oh, here it goes again, early season. And they just stuck to their game plan, got stops, and made some big plays down the stretch.
Yeah, like I said, you had to be impressed. That 8.5-man rotation seems to have died pretty quickly, as you saw, you know, all 10 kind of healthy guys get involved. Seemed like Coach wanted to go with kind of DeSette early and wasn't able to go with him late. And then Lance Waddles is, you know, a guy who kind of has a starting spot that I think a lot of fans, or at least I would sort of say would go or should go or could go to Javis. But at this time, it's Lance, and he didn't have it going offensively against Western Michigan and saw his minutes kind of dwindle. And that, I think, was potentially a door opening for Jakari and JB. And boy, they kind of showed out there. But at least for now, the Bison rolling 10 deep.
Yeah, and the Waddles started at the beginning of last year, if I remember right, and kind of struggled. And, I mean, 0 for 5 and 0 for 4 from the 3. He obviously has shown something in practice, but he seems like the type of player, at least, where he can maybe rattle off 2-3 threes in a row and kind of be a spark plug off the bench. He last year didn't really show much to have consistent starting minutes. And he got five shots up in nine and only played 9 minutes. So I think that's something of a spark to have off the bench. But Jakari's also a spark off the bench, and he showed how valuable he can be on the defensive end a lot last year, and showed it again this year in that first game. And man, did he hit some big threes, and he seems to have done that quite often, just carrying over from last year. And I was really impressed with the freshman Burke. Just the way they crashed the glass. I mean, Western Michigan, I said it in our article, Dwayne Stevens is a Michigan State guy, and Tom Izzo preaches all practice about rebounding. And they led the MAC in rebounding last year, and we out-rebounded 59, 46, and had like 26 offensive rebounds. And that just shows that we continued to play hard even when shots weren't falling, and got a huge road win.
Yeah, and JB's actually a JUCO guy, so I think he actually has junior year eligibility. But he's really interesting to me, just because, and I mean this as a absolute compliment, he is a guard from a movement standpoint. Like, to me, that kid moves like a guard. And as I mentioned, I can't possibly mean any more of a compliment by that. I mean that at a 6'7", I don't notice that much different in his movement skills from plenty of guys that they have literally playing guard. And he's bouncy, gets in the way, does a great job of crashing O-boards, crashing D-boards. There's not a liability defensively anywhere from the 1, 2, 3, and 4. I can see obviously where a coach, you know, has the talk about the transition, the JUCO to even like we remember with Vinny Shahid, he wasn't Vinny Shahid right away. They got their butts kicked a couple times Vinny's first year at NDSU. He wasn't quite there. But it's going to be tough, I think, for coach to not play Burke at least at the beginning, just from a raw athleticism standpoint. And then once the game kind of slows down for him, I'm interested to see some of his offensive arsenal as well.
Yeah, and a kid that plays that hard is going to see the floor for Dave, and he's obviously got some length and is going to use that on the defensive end, and that's the big thing that Dave especially looks for early on in the year. But that tipping at the buzzer, I mean, that was a freaky athletic play, and hopefully he keeps carrying stuff over. And, yeah, a lot of 6'7 guys nowadays are turning into guards. I mean, we saw Grant Nelson. That's basically a 6'11 guard. I mean, he's obviously a different type of athlete, but 6'7 guys are going to play on the perimeter nowadays. It seems a lot. You see a lot more and more of it, and hopefully Burke can keep carrying stuff over and keep getting better.
Jakari White, again, I don't know, you know, if you were talking about an 8, 8.5-man rotation, you know, was Jakari a part of the plan with Tejavis coming off the bench? Clear that they wanted to use Derek Doucette, and then clear that they obviously want to and will continue to use Josh Streit. Like, that's 8. Was he the half? I don't know. You know, I don't know. But what I do know is that he had, you know, crucial buckets, continues to be an excellent defender. For a kid that's probably all of just 6'3", and really is I think forced himself right back into the rotation as he did last year. I don't know that they can, you know, really afford to go away from Jakari at this point, and especially when, you know, with no Grant, I would say it is imperative that Skunberg has, you know, quite a bit of the offensive load, and at least for the first two games, he's been their leading scorer. I think there's going to be times when he continues to be their leading scorer. And, you know, maybe that means he doesn't draw the Zeke Mayos and the McBrides of the league. I don't know. Or, you know, maybe that means he doesn't guard Baylor Shireman on Saturday. I don't know. But, you know, they might need Jakari for some of that stuff.
Yeah, and I think we were all a little bit surprised at how low he seemed in the rotation to open the year, especially after he seemed to really come on midway to the end of last year, where he was taking on the best opposing players guard, taking him on to the defensive assignment every game. And I'm glad that he got his shot and took advantage of it right away. And we obviously don't know what all happens behind the scenes in practice and all that stuff, and I'm sure it's something related to that, which has him at that point in the rotation, because Dave's not going to play players that he doesn't always trust. And for some reason that went away with Jakari, if it was off season or practice or whatever it was, but it was good to see him give that spark in the second half. I don't know if we win that game or don't even keep it within single digits if he doesn't have the second half that he had.
I think that's probably right. One note I find interesting, and we'll discuss this, but you told me, Nate, that you had a chance to flip through the two posts that we had yesterday, and talking about kind of instant impact and just so many of these guys that they have, you know, got minutes as true freshmen last year and are sort of lumped together when you talk about Wheeler Thomas, and you talk about Tejavis Miller, and you talk about Waddles, and then my guy here that I want to discuss briefly, which is Sam Hostreiter. I think Sam's had some stuff. I think he had like a concussion type deal or some sort of something like that in practice, and is not currently suiting up. I wonder, and he'd obviously have to be cool with it, but I wonder if they're not thinking redshirt there. And honestly, if that doesn't make at least a little bit of sense. Get him one more year kind of removed from that class. And when they're playing Fetterson at the four, which is definitely Hostreiter's position, I don't know that Hostreiter makes a ton of sense at like the three or the two, and he's not a five man. You wonder if they're going to play Fetterson and Burke at the four, if they really need a third four that can go this year, do you try and buy Hostreiter just one full year when you're already in a situation where they're having, you know, 10 legitimate guys fighting for minutes, you know? And so I wonder if maybe throwing an 11th guy into that mix doesn't make a ton of sense. I don't know.
Yeah, injury-wise, you can kind of, if that's kind of in your initial plans, you can kind of play it by ear. I know a guy in my class, I mean, Jordan Auberg, had concussion issues when he, I forget which year it was, I think it was my junior or senior year, where he basically was held out the whole year and then ended up getting a red shirt out of it. Dave's done it before with guys like Jarius Cook. I don't know if there was anyone else, but I know he played it for a year and then all of a sudden redshirt. I think it was a sophomore year. And so, I mean, it's something where, I mean, Dave's just going to try to break up the classes the way he wants them broken up. And Sam obviously has some experience from last year, but if we have guys who are going to provide the same type of impact that Sam could provide, I think you roll with Fetterson and Burke at the four.
Yeah, I mean, if it were up to me, that's what I would do, or I would at least have the conversation, and then if a couple injuries happen here or there, say, okay, well, sorry, Sam, you know, we think we have a pretty good team, and, you know, we're going to roll with you. But at this point, again, like I said, I wonder if it's not, you know, at least a thought where you have 10 guys that you're real comfortable with. Does that 11th guy need to burn a year of eligibility? I don't know. I thought there was really some maturity shown in that victory. You can tell those freshmen are sophomores. You can tell Jakari is now a junior. And really, just I think this group as a whole, with the obvious, you know, aspect of it being that Nelson's not there, but this group as a whole, having won two Summit League tournament games, having, you know, won some big games in the Summit League regular season together and kind of gone through some of that stuff together. And I will say, too, like, Grant didn't take the last shot every time, you know. I mean, that wasn't necessarily his role. So some of these guys that are, you know, having to step up in big moments, they've been there, they've done that. And I don't know if that's a game they win last year, even, you know, of course you add Grant into the mix, but I don't know that is a game that they win last year.
No, and we talked about it. A MAC team that's picked 10th, I mean, I think the MAC is – I mean, yeah, there's some teams that would beat a lot of the MAC teams, but the MAC's a better conference. They just simply are. And to win on the road at any MAC school is a big win. And our non-conference schedule doesn't have as many high majors this year, which I kind of like. And we talked about this the other day. But we have a lot of really good mid-majors on our non-conference schedule. So this
group's crazy. Yes.
It's going to be tested probably more than any other year from that perspective. I mean, you go into those high major games – with the young team like last year, you're just trying to keep within 20. Now you got mid-major games that are going to be huge if it were to ever come to seeding for the NCAA tournament.
So, and I want to have a little discussion about that and just kind of break down this schedule because we haven't had we didn't get the opportunity to do a like basketball preview pod. It was sort of something we wanted to do, but it just didn't shake out that way. I think if you're just sort of the basic NDSU basketball fan, and that's fine, we love you. But if you're just sort of the basic NDSU basketball fan, you're thinking, boy, this kind of sucks. They're, you know, we're used to, you know, multiple, multiple opportunities as far as the high major games are concerned, and they don't exist. It's just the Creighton game, and you know, that kind of sucks. It would have been fun to, you know, have some more of those opportunities, play whatever. I mean, I'll just say it, man. It's pretty darn intense, this non-con schedule from a mid-major standpoint. Yes, you have Mount Marty, won that game. Wisconsin Stout, Oak Hills. Those will be, you know, kind of non-D1s. They'll sort of pad the overall end-of-season record. And, you know, if you're not giving the Bison much of a chance on Saturday against Creighton, which any given college basketball game, but Creighton's a very, very, very good club. And you know, I don't know, just NDSU got killed the last time they played down in Omaha. And just Creighton is – they are something. This is going to sound mean, but, like, they are just extremely, extremely high-level mid-major basketball, if that makes sense. To me, they're, like – they're high major, they're the eighth team in the, number eight team in the country. But when you think about mid-major basketball and you think about, guard play, they're not just going to out-athlete you. They're going to out-skill you. And these, they're just so skilled. They're so unbelievably skilled. And then they have, Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's an All-American defending the rim. Baylor Shireman can do anything. Trey Alexander can do anything. Mason Miller's a nice young prospect, and they just got a point guard in the portal to replace Nemhard. They're just very, very, very skilled. UC Davis in a neutral site. They're in the middle of the Big West. That's going to be interesting to check out. At Montana, true road game, number two in the Big Sky. That's going to be a very serious test. At GCU, true road game, impossible place to win. They're the clear favorites in the WAC, and I would say that the WAC is a higher-level conference than the Summit. Like, NDSU is not going to be favored in that game. San Jose State with an in-season home-and-home. That's a middle-of-the-pack Mountain West team, and that's sort of like the pie-in-the-sky dream for Bison basketball for me.
San Jose State just beat UC Irvine, I think, picked to win the league in some of the preseason polls in their first games.
And so, you get the fun of it all, I guess, with having Coach Miles there. But, they could go 0-2 easily. I mean, they could go out to San Jose and lose and then come back to Fargo and lose. Like, that absolutely could happen. And, that's, like I said, pie in the sky, right? Your football program gets your basketball program into the Mountain West and the rest of your programs. That'd be pretty cool, but that's not where they are right now. They're a top-level Summit League team. And to do that with San Jose State, I mean, you could absolutely go 0-2. Then you've got Illinois State at Illinois State, middle of the pack, Valley. We know the Valley is a higher level league, obviously, with the success that we've seen from Loyola Chicago and out of that league, and I don't know if they're even still in that league, but Northern Iowa, of course, has had quite literally national level success coming out of the Valley. Illinois State themselves has had good teams, and then, so you got true road games at both Illinois State and at SIU. You host Montana, again, number two in the Big Sky. That's no guaranteed victory. And then you go out to Eastern Washington, and they're a top two or three team in the Big Sky, true road game. This is a bear. This schedule is an absolute bear. It's not, okay, we're going to play Kansas, then we're going to play Creighton, then we're going to play Arkansas. That's a different kind of bear. But this thing's nasty.
Yeah, they'll truly be tested, and I think that's what they wanted with these young guys who played last year as freshmen coming back and bringing that experience. I think he wanted these guys to be tested with mid-major level teams that are going to be the same level that they're going to see in the Summit League tournament, if not even better teams that they're going to be facing. So I think that the schedule I like a lot better than going to get your three guarantee games in like last year. Obviously, you play Mac again at Creighton, but other than that, it's going to be road games and tough home games, and they're going to have to bring it every night, or they're not going to win. It's quite simple. Quite simple. They're going to have to bring it and play really good basketball if they want to win a lot of those non-conference games, whether the teams are picked in the middle of the pack or the top of the league.
All right. Hopefully, the VIPs have had a chance to get into the VIP post that we did about National Signing Day yesterday, because we're going to kind of deep dive. I want to start with Andy Stefanowicz. I think he's, a mid-major guard. That's what I think he is. I don't think, Andy probably has the length that you'd look for in a high man. Look, NDSU's mid-major. That's not what I'm saying. But, the young man's 6'1". I would guess that'd be about the end of it. I think he's going to be fine. Like, Ben Woodside was 5'10". That was all fine. But he's a smaller dude, and I like him as, again, a kind of a mid-major guard. Passes the ball well. Averaged almost 7 assists a game last year, and I just think he's going to be a Dave guy, man. And I don't know that he'll ever necessarily dominate in a way that Woodside or LA or Vinny did. But I just think he's going to be tall enough and long enough, and it's just going to do everything else kind of the way Dave wants things done. Right. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. He sure seems like one of those type of kids. And I Minnetonka's still a pretty big school, I would guess, in the Twin Cities area. So he's obviously coming and playing some pretty good competition there. And
Yeah, it's four A ball. It's four A ball. Yeah. There's no joke there.
And he's got he knows Bison pride. He's obviously got the ties there, and like you said, he's the type of guy that Dave is going to be able to test his toughness and get that out of him right away, like he does with a lot of freshmen. And I think he's going to relish in that. And I think he has a chance to be a solid player. I don't know if he's going to be type of player that's going to be a star, but he's the type of player that you want on your team is what it's looking like to me.
As far as impact, you know, I think it'll just sort of depend on what happens, I think, after this season, right? You know, do Damari and Javis and Lance and Jakari all stay? Well, if they all stay, and I have no reason to believe that they won't, but if they all stay and whatever, you know, sort of long-term gets figured out this season, which, you know, there was a lot of talk of Lance, but it just ended up being Tejavis bringing the ball up when Damari sat, and that's fine. Like, I actually think Tejavis as a backup point guard, because the year after you graduated, I think Taylor was the backup point guard. Now, L.A. played damn near the whole game.
He was my senior year.
Sure.
My senior year, Taylor was playing a lot of backup point guard. And then if he was in foul trouble, I was kind of the spot guy there.
Sure.
Senior year, Taylor played a lot of backup point guard.
Throw your ass in there if they needed somebody to shoot free throws.
Yeah, and when Joel Lindbergh got hurt, Taylor was – that's kind of where he went in. So, yeah. I came in end of the game to shoot free throws, and if we needed an offensive spark.
So anyway, you know, I think if those guys stay together, maybe Andy redshirts. I don't know. Or, you know, if not, or if just he's that dude, well, then you have a backup point guard for 2 years and you have a starter for 2 years. That seems pretty simple, right? Because Wheeler Thomas came after COVID. He's going to play 4 years. He's not going to play five. And I think, you know, Richmond and Wheeler Thomas are connected at the hip at this point, and that's great. And I think that's kind of what Dave probably wanted his relationship with Kai Cabellis to be. And now he's got it in Wheeler Thomas, and I think he's going to try for it again with Stefanowicz. And I think it'll work out fine. I just wonder if it's maybe we redshirt this kid and we get 3 years of a starter with Stefanowicz, where you know, he maybe plays some primary backup as a redshirt freshman, and next season they just roll with Javis or Jakari or Lance or whomever as that backup point guard. Because, like, are you really going to take those minutes away from Javis and give them to Stefanowicz? I don't know that would be the case.
Yeah, and I do think, though, with the way the portal is nowadays, if a kid's ready to play, I wouldn't redshirt him. Whether there's minutes there for him, you got to find a way to get him on the floor, because you never know how long you're going to have a kid.
You really don't. And
if he becomes a better player than you expect him to be, well, guess what? He's going to go to a bigger school. So if a kid's ready to play, I don't think you redshirt him just because you don't think there's a spot for him. I think you put him on the floor if he's ready to rock and roll. So,
and I think for me too, like the family ties, and I know, look, the portal knows no, you know, takes no prisoners, but you do have the NIL collective now at NDSU, and I'm not saying it's going to keep everyone out of the portal, but it should help. And with you know, his mom being a literal legend, and his dad obviously playing for the men's program, maybe it's something you can get away with. I don't know. And I will say, too, on the portal side, just the odds, I would say the odds, and I'm not singling out one of these guys specifically, but the odds that Damari and Tejavis and Jakari and Waddles are all, you know, all four stay out of the portal again, I don't know. I don't know. I especially with how much it looks like Dave wants to play DeSette. I don't know. And so there certainly could be, you know, immediate impact room for Stefanowicz as well. I don't know. I just maybe maybe to the kid, if he really is, and obviously right now he'd say he's committed or he wouldn't have committed, but you know, you just pitch it as, hey, do you want to be the starting point guard here for 2 years or three? And maybe that's a worthwhile conversation. I don't know. Isaiah Howard is really interesting, Nate. Isaiah, young man from Plattsburgh, Missouri, which is sort of a Kansas City suburb and sort of not. I mean, it's about 45 minutes away. And the town, if you just look it up on Google, is 2,100 people. They play 2A basketball. And he is putting up the kind of numbers that you would expect a kid from a town of 2,000 people that's getting Division I interest to put up, averaging, Nate, averaging 26 points, 13 boards, almost 5 assists, almost 5 steals. That's video game stuff. But it's 2A ball. So he is just fascinating to me.
Yeah, and you think of a small school type player, and you think of a kid like Bowden. I mean, he averaged high 20s, low 30s at Jamestown, which is a smaller type school. And some of that stuff translates to the Division I level, and there's going to be a lot of a learning curve at the freshman level when he's coming in. I'm sure he's going to be in for a little bit of a rude awakening, and hopefully Dave usually tries to get those guys as prepared as they can with off-season stuff when they first get there. But like you said, he has a chance to be a true hidden gem and get some weight on him, and he's obviously got the ability to score.
Yeah, and even that, and I'm not I have nothing against this program, but even that, Jamestown has 7.5 times as many people as Plattsburgh, and Bowden was not much of a scorer as a true freshman. It might not matter. I mean, Howard might just come in and average 12 a game as a true freshman. I have no idea. It is sincerely almost impossible for me to know. Currently, I'm planning on going down for the little roadie where they play, I think, in Kansas City on Thursday and in Omaha on Saturday. That might be a one just because I've got a buddy who lives in Kansas City. And I might go watch the young man play. They've got a game that Wednesday night before NDSU plays in Kansas City on Thursday night. Might have to go check out the young man. Not that I'll necessarily learn a ton there, but my God, the productivity is just insane. I mean, video game numbers, truly. 26, 13, 5, and 5 is I don't know. It's something. And finally, the highest level guy, just from a strict recruiting standpoint, 3-star kid. Said no thank you to Wyoming, said no thank you to South Dakota State, and that's Trayson Anderson. Trayson is a 6'10 forward from Pius X in Lincoln, Nebraska, the same school that brought you Sam Hostreiter, the same school that brought you Kobe Rada, and, of course, the same town that brought you one Sam Griese, although Sam did not play for Pius X. Trayson is super intriguing, averaged 3 points a game as a sophomore, and then I think bumped that up to just basically like 15 and 10 averages as a junior. People very excited about his athleticism, about his length. And I think you talk about a path. Well, if they're going to play Feddersen at the four, pretty easy to see the path, Nate, with Josh Streit and Andrew Morgan both carrying junior designations this year. They'll be seniors next year. Okay. You know, whatever time he would get as a true freshman, kind of backing up Morgan or splitting time with Streit or you know, whatever it may be, banging against Streit and Morgan in practice, I guess. And then, you know, really having the opportunity to be a 3-year starter at that five spot if they're going to continue to utilize Feddersen as a four. I think there's talent really meeting opportunity with the Trayson Anderson signing.
Yeah, you see 6'9", 215, and you can guess that a summer with Jason Miller is going to have that at about 230, 235, with some weight being added pretty quick and got a little bit of a meal plan. And I don't know if he plays much on the perimeter. I think he seems like more of a straight-up five-man, and it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, he looks like he's got the build to be pretty good, and Dave does a very good job with big guys. And I know that was kind of Kyan's place until he went to Omaha, but Dave did a really good job with the groups, especially when he coached my teams when I played. Big guys have developed. I mean, you got guys like Rocky and you got guys like Grant. I mean, those guys developed obviously very well and had great careers.
Absolutely. No, they've been a big man factory. I mean, Marshall Bjorklund, obviously Lucas Mormon played a ton of games, but over and over again, NDSU has had tremendous amount of success with these guys that are 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", and continue to be loading up, it looks like, with Morgs, obviously, and then with Hostreiter, and again, with the Trayson Anderson as a 3-star kid committing to North Dakota State, that's a big deal. Had an exhibition, well, not an exhibition, I shouldn't say that, had a non-D1 last night, although you guys might be getting this on Friday morning, so it might have been two nights ago, with the folks at Mount Marty, which is a smaller school in South Dakota. And the old Bison gave up 41 to Mount Marty in the first half, and the head coach was upset.
Yeah, and I kind of reminded me of the
the game my freshman year, we beat Dickinson State by 9. I think I told you about some of the drills that we did the next day in practice. But yeah, those games are very tough because you got young players going to the game thinking that they're far superior than a Division II or III team. I don't even know what Marty is. But you're going into the game thinking you're just going to pound a team, and then you go away from things that you want to do. And that's the biggest thing that Dave is probably preaching is, yeah, you want to use your non-D1 games to get those wins, but you also don't want to go away from your culture and what you guys are going to need to do to beat teams on your schedule that are going to be a lot better.
Yeah, I think, you know, you get the dub. They win the game by almost 30. And maybe just a little bit of a wake-up call. Hey, you thought you were pretty hot stuff after that win at Western Michigan. Well, you got Creighton on Saturday. Nate, what can NDSU fans, I mean, again, the number 8 team in the country, they're very, very well coached by, you know, former NDSU head man Greg McDermott. Little different flavor, no Art Kaluma, and no Nembhard either, but they are still a very, very talented basketball team.
Yeah, they're an offensive machine. I mean, Tyshawn Alexander is really good. Baylor Scheimer's really good. Kalkbrenner's back, protecting the rim, and can score. It's going to be a tough test.
All right, Nate, I know you got to get going. We appreciate you so much, and we'll get moving right on here with the show after this. All right, I want to thank Nate for making the time there as he traverses the state of Wisconsin, trying to get to a seminar of some sort. But we love Nate. We love Nate. Southern Illinois, North Dakota State, 7.5-point favorites. Everybody kind of remembers, honestly, I would say everybody sort of remembers Southern Illinois as the team that kind of smacked the dynasty upside the head. Folks remember that spring game out in Carbondale and just remember kind of the shockwaves that it sent. And, you know, we talked about the attrition, guys leaving the program, things of that nature, and just how, you know, kind of odd some of that spring season was. I sort of personally have an asterisk on that spring season. I just think it was, I don't know, weird football. I digress. But that smacking, I don't know that it's ever necessarily left NDSU. I think folks still think about that and the fact that the Bison went down to Carbondale last year and got a win and that season and certainly just beating the absolute bejesus out of SIU in the playoffs on their way to the national championship in the 2021 season has maybe helped them get over some of that or lick some of those wounds, but it's still a tough place to play. And this game, I guess, being at home, but it's a tough team, and I do use the word tough. I mean, they are somewhat of a reflection of North Dakota State, with the exception that they do, you know, do an odd front. They do run a 3-4 defense, and it's given NDSU troubles in the past, and that was one of, I guess, the selling points on Coach Petrino is he's been able to defend the Bison. So, you know, if he's coordinating the Bison defense, that might be helpful. And the defensive side of the ball will be interesting for me. You get kind of beaten down in that way. You know, you don't get the stops against South Dakota State that you need. You get kind of embarrassed again defensively. And from a pride standpoint, I think there's an opportunity here against SIU, who has been a good football team. You know, they're coming in here as the 11th ranked team in the country. They're coming in here, I think, with the same basically identical record at 6-3 and 3-3 in the Valley. Having gotten the one that just freaks me out is getting killed by Youngstown State. That one is odd to me. And they certainly didn't make short work of Murray State, but they had a stronger showing against the Jackrabbits than NDSU did. I don't think there's any question about that. But offensively, you wonder, you know, just how good is this crew? They scored 14 at Northern Illinois. No, that's an FBS game, but they lose 31-3 at Youngstown State. They only get to 27 against Murray State. They only get to 10 against South Dakota State. They only get to 7 against USD in a loss, in a 14-7 loss. You know, how good can this Southern Illinois game, or excuse me, how good can this Southern Illinois team be on the offensive side of the ball? How scary are they? You know, what's the realistic point total that SIU can get to against NDSU, who has proven to not necessarily be the NDSU of years past, but is still, you know, a decent defense that has been rough on bad offenses. I mean, that is one thing that NDSU is doing very well defensively, is they don't really let bad offenses hang around. They kind of bully them, and I guess that's good for what it is. The Sulukis on offense are really kind of buoyed by Nick Baker. He's that shorter quarterback, and it seems like he's been there forever, but he does a good job. He does a good job at SIU, and when you do have a veteran, useful quarterback like that, you're sort of always a threat. I really like Isaiah Hartrup. He's done a good job. Receiver wears number 5, and I enjoy kind of his work, and they're pretty good. Specifically, you go into the Pro Football Focus college advanced stats, and they're a very, very good pass blocking team. They do keep, and with Baker being a smaller guy, it's important. I mean, they do keep him clean. They have a very, very high pass blocking efficiency numbers. They are not as good run blocking, and that's shown in kind of some of the more basic statistics, stuff that you would just sort of, you know, check out on a basic box score, stuff that you might you know, just go into kind of as a fan of 20 years ago, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And when you look at this offense, as I mentioned, as they sort of struggle, you know, to score, why do they struggle to score? Why do they even sometimes struggle, you know, to move the ball? And a lot of that is their inability to get a ton going on the ground. They're not a super efficient team running the football. They don't have a super stud back that, you know, is churning out yards. And I think the Wildcat kid is gone, unless I'm confusing SIU with another team, but Javonte Williams Jr., I believe, was an SIU guy and was just a tremendous pain in the butt. And he's gone. But in total, SIU is only averaging 3.8 yards a carry. Now they're holding opponents to 2.5 yards a carry, which is why they're good, which is why they're 6-3, is they don't let teams run the ball. But the Sulukis are only right now running it for 126 a game. And I would say if NDSU can keep SIU around that number, they're going to have a pretty good chance to win the game. Now Baker is, you know, throwing it for 230 a game, and he's got 13 passing touchdowns. He's not turning the ball over a ton. He's only thrown 5 picks. He's a good veteran quarterback, but as I said, you just look at that offensive production, and you see that, you know, they're only averaging 25 points a game, and you might say, okay, 25, that's pretty good. That's reasonable. Well, go look at the schedule and understand that they had 49 points against an Austin Peay team that's not any good, and they beat Western 63-0. So you take the 49 and the 63 out, and I get NDSU has, you know, those games too, but the numbers start to look a little bit bleak. On the other side of the ball, though, the Sulukis are quite excellent. I've very, very much enjoyed watching the way that they play defense. Even the way that they just defended South Dakota State was very impressive. They have multiple playmakers. I really like, and he doesn't play a ton, but they have a kind of a pass rush specialist in Ben Bogle, kind of a blitzer. You look at Pro Football Focus, he's got 14 pressures. He's number like 3 on the team in pressures, and he's got 114 total snaps. He's an interesting player to watch. As I said, not a full-time guy. Desmond Hearns at safety is just could not be more rock solid. He and PJ Jules are a very, very good duo. And then, you know, they've got just an absolute stalwart in Colin Boanic at the linebacker position, 465 snaps this year, just about leading their defense. The corners are the only guys that have more snaps than Bohannock. And he's just been awesome. Second on the team in tackles, but is doing an excellent job pressuring the quarterback. 5 sacks, 3 knockdowns, and is a decent enough player in coverage as well with a pass break up there and not allowing a ton of yards per catch. He does allow a pretty high percentage of balls into his coverage area to be caught, but he's a good player, man. I really, really like watching Bohannik and really their defense as a whole, and that's going to be a key to the game. NDSU is going to have to be able to run the football, and it's not something that they being SIU have given up a ton is running the ball. And can Cam go nuts? Sure, Cam can go nuts, but if NDSU can't run the football, it's going to be tough. And I think they should be able to do it. I got the Bison winning this game. They're 7.5-point favorites. I've got 24-14, so I do have them covering. I think they'll be up for most of the second half and kick a late field goal or grab a late touchdown to kind of put it away as a two-possession game. Want to thank the good people at Gateway Chevrolet for sponsoring this show. Want to thank Nate Zastro for having the time and in a football season that maybe hasn't been what we all thought it might be. I want to thank all you guys for sticking with us. Have a phenomenal weekend, everybody, and go Bison.